Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. Thank you very much for subscribing to the podcast series. We hope that you enjoy them, and please continue to tell your friends about them. Another request is please consider making a donation in honor of the podcast. It would be of tremendous help to Pardes. You can donate anytime online via the website donate.pardesusa.org. It'll be a big help. A gift of any size will make a real difference. Thank you so much. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Parshat Chukat. Rabbi Alex Israel is a faculty member at Pardes and also serves as a director of continuing education for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha is Parshat Chukat. And one of the features of this week's Parsha is the fact that our leaders all seem to die in this Parsha. If you open to chapter 20, chapter 20 begins with the death of Miriam. According to the rabbis, it was in Miriam's merit, because of her great righteousness, that they actually had water following them through the wilderness. And therefore, the next story is actually that there is a shortage of water, and Moses needs to either speak to or hit the rock, it's unclear. But as a result of that episode, Moses is told that he will not be entering into the land. In other words, Moses is also decreed that he himself will die. And at the end of that very chapter, chapter 20, Aharon dies. We see Parshat Chukat seems to unravel the leadership that has guided the Jewish people for a generation, who has taken them from Egypt through to the border of Israel. In fact, we arrive at the border of Israel in the last lines of this week's Parshat Shavuah, Parshat Chukat. And therefore, it is definitely a parasha of transition. And one should look at it that way. Miriam dying, Aharon dying, Moshe is going to be leaving us soon, and we're arriving in Israel. We are ready in Parshat Chukat, or getting ready for the next stage. However, I would like to actually focus a little bit on the contrast, the difference between Moshe and Aharon, between Moses and his brother Aaron. Of course, they had very different roles. Moses was the leader, he was the one who was the prophet. Aharon didn't serve in so central a prophetic capacity, he was the high priest. What can we say about these two people, and where are the clues in our Parashat Shavuah? Well, one fascinating Rashi, which I'm going to use today to talk about, is this. If you look at chapter 20, verse 29, after Aharon died, we are told that the entire house of Israel wept for him for 30 days. The entire community cried for Aharon and mourned his death. That is the way the people responded. And Chazal, the rabbis, come along and actually say that this is a contrast to Moshe Rabbeinu. This is a contrast to Moses. Why do I say that? Because if you look at Moses' death, at the end of the book of Devarim, in Vezot HaBracha, this is actually the Torah reading for Simchat Torah. There it says that the Israelites wept for him for 30 days, but it doesn't use the phrase Kol Adat Yisrael, the entire house of Israel, Kol Beit Yisrael. It just says the Israelites wept for him, not the entire house of Israel wept for him. What's the difference? Rashi here in Parashat Chukat actually tells us what the difference is. And I'll read Rashi in translation. Rashi says this: the entire house of Israel, men and women, because Aaron pursued peace and would promote love between husbands and wives who were in a state of friction and disagreement. In other words, the emphasis on the house of Israel was that Aharon was a home builder. Aharon was somebody who was a marriage counselor, who helped people who were in a state of marital disrepair, marital friction, and helped repair their marriages. Now, what exactly I don't remember ever being told this idea that Aharon helped people in their marriages. I can't even think of one narrative in the entire five books of the Torah which relates to this fact. And therefore, where do we get this tradition from? And yet, in Avot de Rabbi Natan, which is a Midrashic source, we find many, many stories about Aharon and his special role of making peace between people. Maybe the earliest source in this regard is in Pirkei Avot, in the first chapter, where it says, Hillel Omer, Hevemi Talmidav Shel Aharon. Hillel says, be one of the students, the disciples of Aharon. Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. He loved peace. He didn't even only love peace. He pursued peace. He ran after it. Ohev et Abriot u'mekorvan la'Torah. He loved people, and he drew them close to Torah. That is what Hillel, the Tana Hillel, says about the high priest Aharon. And the Midrash in Avot Rabbi Natan, which is a Midrash based on Pirkei Avot, fills in the details. And I'll read some of the stories. When Aharon went on his way, and a wicked person encountered him, Adam Rasha, Aharon greeted him. The next day, that man thought to commit a sin. But then a thought came into his head. Woe to me! How will I lift up my eyes afterwards and look Aharon in the face? I'm ashamed before him because he greeted me. And here's another story that Avot Rabbi Natan mentions. When two people quarreled, Aharon went and sat down with them. He sat with the first and said, my son, you should know that your friend has said, I'm ashamed and I've sinned against him. And Aharon would sit with him until he dispelled the ill feeling from his heart. Aharon would go and sit with the other guy and say to him, you should know that your friend is saying, woe to me, how shall I raise up my eyes and look at my friend? I am ashamed before him because I've sinned against him. Aharon would sit with the second person until he had dispelled the ill feeling from his heart. When the two friends later met, they embraced and kissed each other. And in the final paragraph of the Midrash it says, there were thousands in Israel who were actually named Aharon. For it were not for Aaron, they would never have come into the world. You see, Aharon made peace between husband and wife, so that the husband and wife came together, and when a child was born, they named that child after him. Aharon seems to have a mission, and that is to draw people together in peace and harmony. It would appear that he is so dedicated to this mission, this task, so driven, that he resorts to subterfuge and even lies, I'm not even sure they're white lies, they're downright lies, in order to convince rival parties to settle their differences. And apparently he was successful. I have to be honest that I've always wondered how this thing would necessarily succeed. It could be a disaster. Imagine if he goes around to the first guy and he said to him, your friend's so upset. He's so upset he hurt you. And the guy said, oh, if he's so upset, you know, whatever it is. And then he went to the second guy and said, the person you just argued with yesterday, he's distraught, he's in an awful state, you've got to make up with him. And eventually they meet up, and one says, oh, I heard you were really upset. And he says, me upset? I heard you were upset. It could all go horribly wrong. You can imagine they could end up in even a deeper quarrel as a result of the misinformation fed to them by Aharon. But here we have the technique that Aharon uses around the Israelite camp here in the Midbar, which is one of achieving peace and harmony between people by making up between them. By the way, it's not only the fact that he makes up quarrels between people and ensures that they resolve their differences, it's also his simple friendliness. We read about where Aharon would walk on the way and he encountered a wicked person and said hello, and then that person was about to do something wrong and suddenly said, hey, how am I going to confront Aharon tomorrow? After all, he's my friend. I can't do this now and then be friendly with Aharon tomorrow. And therefore, he stopped doing his bad things. The Midrash tells us that this is the technique of Aharon, but not Moshe. According to Rashi, in that Rashi that we quoted early, why did the people cry for Aharon for 30 days? Because he was so nice. But Moshe, and if you look in the Rashi there, it says, Moshe mochichan bidvarim kashim. Moshe used to rebuke them with harsh words. He used to tell them off. He used to tell the people when they had done wrong deeds, and he put them into line. And the question is, why were Moshe and Aharon so different? Apparently Aharon had a very soft approach and always used to embrace people warmly, whereas Moshe frequently told it as it was. Of course, we can speculate. I mean, it's possible that their difference was a matter of personality. Different people have different personalities. But we could speculate the difference was actually a function of their respective roles. After all, Moshe is the leader. The buck stops with Moshe. He's the man at the top of, if I dare say, the pyramid. and he must know how to set things straight, how to say things to the nation, and to bring the nation into line when necessary. He might not win a seat at the, you know, in the next election as a result, but sometimes a responsible leader, Moshe, has to engage in unpopular measures in order to take the nation forward. Aharon, on the other hand, didn't have the same responsibility. He wasn't the political leader. Maybe he could afford to smile at everyone. As a high priest, he says a daily blessing of peace. And maybe he felt that it was his mandate to pursue goals of harmony and conciliation without fear that his gentle and easygoing approach would be abused in crisis situations. Moshe realized that in a crisis, he was the stopgap. Aharon could adopt a softer approach. We could say that it's a question of their function, but I'd like to actually suggest a third approach. At the beginning, I suggested maybe their different approaches are a difference of personality. It could be that it's a difference of role. But I'd like to suggest that possibly it could be a difference of ideology. Let me explain. Again, let's remind ourselves of one of the stories. Aaron went on his way, and a wicked person encountered him. Aaron greeted him. The next day, the man wanted to commit a sin and thought, "Woe to me, how will I raise my eyes before Aharon? I'm ashamed for him, and because he greeted me," and then he stopped doing bad things. So Aaron befriends a wicked person. Who is this wicked person? Who could we imagine this person? Could it be a man who is a well-known liar and fraudster? Maybe a sort of a character who's defrauded people of millions or billions? Could it be a person who beats his wife, who abuses his children? Could it be somebody who, I don't know, owns a network of gambling casinos? Now, Aharon is the high priest. He is the number two man in the camp. He has befriended this fellow. Couldn't Moshe's perspective be more appropriate? Imagine what Moshe might have said to Aharon. He says, "You see a man in the street, you're his best friends. You're condoning his actions. You're accepting him as a full member of the community. How can you act in this manner? People will see you being friendly with this casino boss, this mafia boss. What are they going to say about the high priest? Maybe they'll even say that you're getting some money off on the side. We've just read Parashat Korach. People are accusing the leadership of inappropriate actions." Moshe could turn around to Aharon and say, "What is your business being friendly, befriending this person? You can't do that." The story with the two people arguing is no better. Aaron comes along and actually uses deception to reconcile the two warring factions, the two warring aggressors. And what if the ploy fails? And anyway, don't we have a value of truth? What's going on? Maybe one can argue that this is exactly the point of difference between Aharon and Moshe. Aharon seems to have an approach that through tolerance, openness, peace, harmony, acceptance, unity, through shalom we can solve problems. I think it must be stated that shalom is a value in Judaism, but shalom sometimes comes at a price, and that price is that truth may have to be compromised to reach the end of shalom. And I'll try and develop this a little bit more. Moshe disagrees. Moshe, the man who saw God so clearly on Mount Sinai. Moshe, the man who is the Navi, who sees Baspaklaria Hama'ira with a clear glass, is the man of truth. And he says one cannot blur lines and fudge boundaries. If two people have a problem, they have to solve it. One can't fudge the differences. A sinner is a sinner. And you can't compromise truth, because it's a slippery slope that who knows where it will end. No tactics are worth hiding the facts. Better say the truth even if it's unpopular. So what I'm arguing is that Moshe is the man of emet, truth, whereas Aharon is the man of shalom. And that sometimes emet, truth, comes at the expense of shalom. If you want truth, you won't have peace. And sometimes you have peace, you actually have to fudge the truth, blur the truth. Now, you might say, no, we can have peace and truth all together. But on the way here to Pardes this morning, I was listening to the radio, and there was a discussion about the peace process, and they were interviewing a Palestinian spokesman. And he was talking exactly about this. Are we willing to give up certain truths? He was talking about the truths that he believes in, that Jerusalem is the capital of the Palestinians, and that the Palestinian refugees from 1948 have an eternal injustice, and that we cannot have peace without making wrong those truths. Now, one can well argue, we're going to stand on our truth, but then will we have peace? And if we have peace, well, what about those truths? Some people will say, well, it's better to have peace and smile at each other and ignore some of those truths in order to make peace. And other people can't get beyond those truths in order to make peace. It is true in Jewish communal unity as well. Sometimes in Orthodox congregations, the question is whether you will accept a non-Orthodox congregation. There are certain truths that they feel have been compromised. Okay, but on the other hand, if they want to stand on their principles of truth, there is unlikely to be communal unity and shalom. And sometimes we love shalom, we love truth, these are two values which we embrace. Sometimes we aren't fully aware that there are times when truth, if you want to uphold the banner of truth, you might end up getting into arguments with people. And a great example might be even what the Midrash talks about, marital life, living in a home with somebody where sometimes you feel something is true, that you're being wrong, but if you want to get on with the person you're living with, you ignore it in order to be together with them. Sometimes, though, it is wrong to ignore it, or you can't ignore it. And then sometimes shalom doesn't follow. It is certainly a fine art to be able to master, to embrace both shalom, peace, and emet, truth. What I want to suggest is that actually we had two leaders, and maybe it's good that we had two leaders. Maybe we needed two leaders. Maybe we needed a Moshe, a man of truth, a man of law, and an Aharon, a man of peace, because maybe it is too difficult to actually champion both of these values in a single person. I will end off with another Mishnah from Pirkei Avot, at the end of the first chapter of Pirkei Avot. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel used to say, he was the Nasi, he was the leader of the community. He said, the world stands on three things: on law, al hadin, va'al ha'emet, va'al ha'shalom. The world stands on three things: on law, on truth, and on peace. And he quotes the prophet Zechariah, who says, judge in your gates truth and the justice of peace. There is no doubt that every single law system in the world tries to achieve both of these goals, tries to achieve peace and harmony between warring factions, between arguing companies, between competitors. They try and create peace, but they also try and uphold truth. And I'm sure that any jurists who are listening to this broadcast will agree that occasionally there are actually tensions between the two. So I hope that we become familiar, maybe not through the text of the Torah itself, but through the rabbinic tradition, with the very interesting features that characterize both Moshe and Aharon, peace and truth. And we've had a moment to really think about the fact that these two values, which are both a full part of Judaism, can occasionally conflict. And all of us have to try and maneuver that very, very thorny difficulty when they actually do conflict. Do we respond like a Moshe? Or like an Aharon? That might be a question of, as we said before, personality. It might be a question of our role in the community, or it might even be a question of ideology. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.